Welcome to the Church of Mavis radio show. It's Friday night, 7:10 p.m. Central. We've got a couple of things to buzz on a whole lot. AGT is Kratom.com. AGT is used by people all over for everything from pain relief, anxiety, to sleep, to get energy. It's 100% organic. The product has not been evaluated by the FDA. It's not intended to treat or cure or diagnose any disease or illness. Life is better on Pond Bay. That's AGT is Kratom.com. We've got one book to plug. Pray of God, Nikki Drayton by Harper, Harper Voyager. Read the blurb on the back. From a new voice in the tradition of Lauren Hughes, Donald. I'm trying to read that name. From the 94 I don't know who's up there, but I'm glad to say that name. Thumbs a fantastic boundary, challenging hell, that's a South African locale, both familiar and yet utterly new. Which braids elements of science fiction, fantasy, and horror and dark humor. Robots are making life easier for the working class. Government is harnessing renewable energy to provide infrastructure for the poor. And basically, it's an AI uprising type situation. So it's called Praise of the Gods, P-R-E-Y of the Pray of God. Praise, P-R-E-Y. Nikki Drake. So check it out.
Pray is being eaten rather than as a prayer to God, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Okay.
So, how you feeling after that, Twin Peaks session there, Wham?
Oh, me? Oh, well, I just have watched the first two episodes.
I've seen four.
Yeah, I haven't, I didn't have time, you know, it's like, you have to, for what they've adventures, you have to really concentrate intensely, you know, on what he's doing. And, like I said to you online, without giving any spoilers here at all, if anybody in the audience has not seen the original show or has not seen the movie, you will not have a clue what's going on. So, if you decide to try it, you need to sort of prepare yourself on seeing these other things. And, you know, there are parts of it right now that it's still very much, obviously, in the interest of investors, but it's interesting, you know, I mean, it's David Lynch. What can I tell you? I thought that the weird being coming out of the glass thing was creepy.
The other episodes, there was nothing ever like that in those other episodes, was there? The old episode.
Well, no, but no, there wasn't. But there was the suggestion that there were other beings, you know, in other worlds, and that things could appear and disappear. But there wasn't anything that looks quite like that, no.
Tom
Bond
was like
K-Pac
now.
Well, either that or it was sort of like an Eraserhead moment, you know. It was just creepy the way it was. And you knew that as soon as, you know, the stuff started happening in the observation of this, you knew that bad stuff was going to happen. You know, it's just like, oh, you guys should not be in there. She should not be taking her clothes off.
I think where they said what character I would be, they said I'm the log lady, Capricorn. Log lady.
You're the log lady? Oh.
Yeah,
well, better the log lady than Bob. So.
They're
probably going to have to wait and see how it goes over, you know. I mean, it's like, you know, people like me who like David Lynch, you know, we'll pretty much accept anything the man does, but, you know, that doesn't mean it's going to be, like, a hit, you know.
Exactly. especially the way things are now. So I've looked at the numbers of a lot of new shows like American Gods. You know, plenty got 13 million people back in the day. Now it's getting like 500,000 if they're lucky for any show.
Yeah.
American Gods only got 600,000, and that's like good now or something. But all right, well, let's get to our guest. Tonight's guest is Ron Moorhead, who wrote the book Quantum Bigfoot. Great to have you here, Ron. How you doing?
Thank you, Jeffrey. It's my honor to be with you.
Great to have you, for sure. No doubt about it. And I guess, looking through your bio, man, there's freaking Indiana Jones going on in here. And all over the place. I never leave my house. Except when I do the show.
I've had a good life, that's for sure. I'm boy, happy man.
So what originally got you into Bigfoot? What happened? How'd that start?
Well, there was a hunting group about 8 miles back in the remote area of Sierra Nevada Mountains in California, and I knew them as friends. They encountered two of the brothers went up there in 1971, and they've been going to the camp since 1958, really, but 1971, they went inside this little shelter that they had made, kind of like a big house that you sleep in, just to keep you out of the weather and wind and everything. And they heard these horrific noises, and they thought at first it was a bear just milling around their camp stoves they packed in with mules some time earlier. Anyway, they went out after it was over with and examined the area, and they seen this huge five-toed footprint in the mud right there. And keep in mind, the camp is 8,400 feet in elevation, way up there. You can only get in there certain times of year, and it's during the summer, spring, summer, and fall. It's basically a hunting camp. Well, anyway, make a long story short, they encountered these noises, and they left because they didn't know what to think of it. They came back, told us, and the other guys went up. I didn't go up on that trip, but one of the guys wouldn't go back with them. He was just so scared. And a very religious man, this just didn't fit into his thinking. Well, giants aren't supposed to be here now. What are these monsters? Anyway, they're huge. But to make a long story bearable here, we started recording, and I went up with him because he wouldn't go by himself, so that got me kind of involved in it in early 1971, after these guys, the two brothers, had encountered him first. And we all started going back up with recorders. They kept coming back, a family of these Bigfoot creatures, and we could record the voices, and we did just that, all of us. But it wasn't until 1972, actually the winter of 1971, when one of the brothers, the leader of the group, actually, he's passed away now. He wrote a letter to Ivan Sanderson, who's a cryptozoologist back east. Ivan Sanderson read the 23-page letter, sent it to Peter Byrne, who was on the West Coast studying Bigfoot in Oregon. He thought it was probably a hoax. It's too incredible. These things don't do that, according to what they think. Then Peter Byrne, he sent the letter down to a guy named Alan Berry, who was an investigative reporter working for a newspaper in Redding, California. And Alan made arrangements to come down and talk to us, which we all lived in the southern part of the valley. And he talked to us individually and separately. And anyway, we ended up inviting him up there. Unbeknownst to us, he was actually trying to uncover a hoax of somebody's pulled his leg, because it's just too incredible. But he went up, he ended up recording them also, and he also was able to finally engage with Professor Curlin at the University of Wyoming to study these sounds for a year, just to give it credibility that the tapes were not manipulated, because they speak very, very fast, and they have some horrific sounds. So he knew the professional part of it, they needed to get the credibility behind it. So Dr. Curlin gave a year-long study on it, gave his presentation at the Anthropology of the Unknown in British Columbia. And that kind of gave us some credibility that the sounds were played around with. We knew that, but then that has to be, some professor has to do this stuff, you know, before anybody else can listen to it. So that started. It wasn't until 2008 until cryptolinguist retired from the Navy as a cryptolinguist. 30 years experience of transcribing languages, unknown languages, heard the sounds and came out and interviewed both me and Halberry both. And he said that after a long study with them, he said they have a complex language. Now, by the human definition of language, you've got to throw that in, because the human definition of language means a cognizant sentence made up of 10 or 12 words, at least. And that's what we have. And only sapient beings are supposed to have that. Other animals don't have that. Porpoises are probably close to it, but they don't come out and talk to us like we're talking to you right now, and we're talking to each other. We are sapient beings, and we're made in the image of God as sapient beings, as creators, if you really want to get down to it. And I might be getting ahead of myself here, but if I am, just stop me and butt in and tell me to start over. But we encountered these beings. There's a family of them up there, and we started courting them. They're huge. What they were, first thing I did, because I was administrator of a large church, me and this other guy were involved with the board there, and we wanted to find out where giants came from. I started studying where giants came from, so the only thing I could look to was the Bible. That's the only thing I could think of at the time. Ended up going to Greek mythology and several other things, because there's a lot of history of giants that people just want to look for. And the first ones I came across was in Genesis 6:4, which most everybody's heard, and that's the giants called the Nephilim. And they were a product of alien intervention into the human genome. They were taking our women and breeding them, basically, causing them to have giant children. And these children were called the Nephilim. And they began to devour the earth and everything in it. They were really pretty bad. That's why the flood came. That's why only Noah was saved and his family, because they came from an uncorrupted genome of Enoch. And that's where it goes on and on. But then after the flood, you find the Nephilim were here again in Numbers 13, 33, 34. And so they did it. If the aliens did it once, they can do it again. And they came again, I think. And that's how they got here after the flood. Because everything was destroyed in the flood. Everything that walked the face of the earth was. Anyway, that's where I go in my Quantum Bigfoots book, because these things seem to have attributes. What we're dealing with now, what we call Bigfoot or Sasquatch, has attributes that we're trying to understand. I've had numerous people, and I've been doing this for 45 years. I'm the oldest guy still going around doing it, studying this. I've been around the world. You referred to me as Indiana Jones. Well, thank you, but I've been in spoken Darwin Museum in Moscow, I've been in Siberia, I've been in Nepal, I've been in South America twice, and studying the Inhumex skulls down there and the megalithic structures, seeing how any of that could relate to the giants up here in the north. But I don't try to convince people that Bigfoot exists. I just go a little bit further than that. I go, what could they be for? What are they all about? And I think there's a spiritual meaning to it all. Because at its minute level, we are all spiritual beings. And anyway, that's where I go with my book, is explaining it scientifically, how quantum physics fits into how these giant beings called Bigfoot do what they do, which a lot of people say they disappear, they saw them disappear. I know some people very well that said that. It used to be when I first started interviewing people, I wouldn't buy that. I said, you're delusional. But I don't say that to anybody anymore about anything about these things, because they can do almost anything. They don't seem to interfere with humans any more than they want to occasionally. But there's good ones and the bad ones, and I think it's from possibly different paternal DNA, which means different fathers from different types. Some of them could be diluted form from the eons of time inbreeding with the indigenous people. And some of them are just different than others. Some of them are bad, and some of them are good. I think we encountered probably the good ones. They were just lucky and came out without being carried away and ate. So, anyway, that's how I got started. That's where my studies go, and that's why the second book. My first book is called Voices in the Wilderness, and it's my story, my 40-year chronicle of doing this. I produced that in 2012. And it comes with a CD which has some sound bites in it. As I get to the context of the sound, I tell people what's going on, and they can hear it on the CD. All these are all downloadable on my website. So anyway,
all right, well let's see how Joe's doing with the sound. We got Joe, if you can hear me, the rapid fire sequence, if you want to try that, we'll see if it goes out over the air. You want to give that a try. And then of course we have the others. Anguish sequence, samurai, lute, whistle, talk to us. If, see if I'll give the signal to Joe if he wants to play a few, see how that goes. And, I've heard that guy on the documentary who, tries to talk like them. I don't know if he's Russian or something, but he, like, mimics them. That sounds pretty crazy, but, I mean, from what I'm hearing, it sounds, you know, the sound I've heard from different sources all kind of sound like what that guy was doing. It's kind of like a gibberish that's really weird.
Yeah, I've got the only sounds.
They're actually playing while y'all are talking. For some reason, they're not letting us hear if you're actually playing while we're talking.
Oh, well, but I'm playing while
they are. Yeah, but I'm going to shut them down so they can actually hear me.
Yeah, how long are they
at? Don't play them all, please. Yeah.
No, I'm just playing the rapid fire one right now.
Okay. It's going out over the air, it's just we can't personally hear it, but
yeah,
that's
what
happens.
So what
do you want to tell us about the first one?
Well, is everybody ready to listen? Is it over?
Yeah, but it's still got like 30 seconds, guys.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we gotta get Jeffrey under control here.
All right, play it. Okay, so what about the first one, Ron?
That was the rapid fire?
That's correct, rapid fire.
That we think were two of them that were arguing outside. At first, when we had those sounds, we thought maybe those sounds were directed at us. Again, it was a hunting camp, so we all had high-powered guns with us. Even though it was a hunting season, we carried sidearms. And there's a lot of bear up there, too, so it's a real wilderness country, very inaccessible. It's just rugged country. But these things were there. They were making these sounds, and it's frightening at first, but then you realize it's like a dog growling but never biting you or something. They didn't attack us. They didn't come into shelter after us. They could have tore the shelter apart, I'm sure, as big as they are. And we didn't shoot at them. We didn't go out looking, trying to hit them or anything like that. So we endured it, and over and over and over, and finally you get where you're kind of complacent with it, and you think, well, they're not going to hurt us. We can start playing with it. So we start kind of talking to them, and jabber back. We don't know what they're saying, but that's the way it went on. That kind of explains, I think, that first sound we heard. That's the way I'm thinking of.
Okay, we'll just go ahead and go through them. Joe,
you want
to play
English
sequence and then just let us know when it's done, and then we'll
discuss
it with the others.
It's playing now, and I'll let you know. Wraps it up right there, guys.
Okay, everybody in the chat room's hearing it fine because they're commenting, but on our end it's kind of staticky, but everybody in the chat room's commenting about, someone said it was terrifying, and then someone said it sounded like a primate monkey, just a bunch of people in the chat room who are hearing it fine. What do you want to tell us about that one, Ron? It's an anguish sequence.
Well, it's probably pretty well named for what we thought it was. It was an anguish of some type. We think the sound it did. They are primates, by the way. And as far as them being a monkey, who knows what they are until we get the reliable DNA, both mitochondrial and nuclear DNA, studied thoroughly. Which we don't have any of that I know of yet. That's been corroborated anyway from another geneticist that did do an evaluation of the nuclear DNA, which is the male counterpart, by the way, of DNA. The human side, though, the mitochondria DNA on her report, which is Melba Ketchum, she said it was human. And that leads credence to what I said earlier about these things being part human. And she could not identify any of the male counterparts in the genome bank, which is 224 million species. Types in there, and she couldn't match it with anything, so it's unknown species with a male counterpart, and that's that kind of gave all the rest of the geneticists in the scientific world took a tickle aback, because it just doesn't make sense. It's got to fit within Darwin's evolutionary chain somewhere, doesn't it? So she hasn't got the credibility because there hasn't been any corroboration from her report by another geneticist. And, but the anguish, I guess the sound you want me to talk about, is just another sound that's up there. We record a lot. We have hours and hours of these sounds. We took out some of the best ones, and I produced the two CDs so people could hear them and with the story behind them.
Okay, Joe, the next one, RT Samurai Loop. What does that mean, samurai? I know it's not like Kung Fu samurai.
Well, when you hear it, it came. It was 3 years after we started this thing. This long one, it's a lot of times up there. We're recording a lot. This is when I saw one for the first time in 1974. It started over in 1971. And me and my friend who was with me, we packed in early. And these things had come to know us, I guess, and watched us come in and where we're going. Because they were there before we got there, which we didn't know until the next morning. The samurai cry was coined by a guy named Matt Moneymaker, who was on this Finding Bigfoot program. And before he started his BFRO program on the internet, he heard the sounds. And that's actually how the cryptolinguist got a hold of me, is through the BFRO network. And anyway, the samurai sound, there were three of them there that night. We think a male, a female, and an adolescent. And we recorded them all. And so if we want to play the sound, we'll see how they call it samurai.
Go ahead and play Samurai Loop, and then we'll do the other two.
Oh, it's playing, guys. I've been letting it loop under his voice. I can actually hear. I have y'all muted, so it sounded quite creepy, especially with your voice over the top of it, because you could hear the point you were talking about why the clip was playing, and it's just now wrapped up again, so I'll give it back to y'all.
All right, well, I guess Joe, play Whistle, and then I'll let Ron talk about that, and then we'll do the last one, Talk to Us, and then let Ron talk about that, and we'll be done with Sam.
Okay, gotcha, bud. It's a short one, so I'm going to let it move three or four times.
Is this a whistle?
Yeah.
He's letting it play, and then he'll let us know when it's done. He's letting it play a few times.
Alright guys, it's back to you.
Okay, Ron, what about whistle?
Well, that was one of the first interaction sequences we recorded. Was actually the whistle. We found out through a study then that the whistle was actually done through the vocal cavity and not the lips like we were. Some of we push air through our lips, which most of us do. But these guys whistle through their vocal cavity. And it's just an amazing whistle. They got some amazing vocal abilities, very much superior to ours, actually. In a study that Professor Curley did at the University of Wyoming, he shows a box in his draft where their sound range is way above ours, it's in ours, and it's way below ours. So they have a very big range that can mimic things very well, and they do that. I said, do that would work, they do that. We think we've heard, I've heard a lot of people say, well, I heard this thing call my name. And call my dog's name, stuff like that. So when all that happens, I say, well, they can mimic. You know, they have the vocal range to mimic. And some even think that they may be able to hear it in infrasound, which is below the human hearing. And that can affect human emotion. I think we've been struck by infrasound a few times, either that or something else. But, I mean, one of the other guys walked up to where one of these things was. We think he was behind this big tree, been mouthing off, jumped out of the doorway right quick just to see if we see him run away, and didn't run away. So we started walking up there, real slow, and all of a sudden we just got almost hit like an invisible wall. And he looked at me, I looked at him, and he said, I don't know about you, I can't go any further than I could go. And we was real close to that tree where we think the scent was hiding behind. And I think it just didn't want us to come any further, so. I mentioned that to a scientist years after that. He said, I don't like to hear about your emotions and your feelings. I said, you know, that wasn't a feeling. That was pretty strong where it was, but we weren't afraid of that. We were thinking, you know, these things aren't going to hurt us. I want to see one run away. I want to see one. And all we was getting is glimpses. And so anyway, that's what I call in my first book, A Force Field. And that's being zapped. And the scientist, though, he said, you know, it could have been pheromones, but pheromones only work within the same species. But now that we know that they're part, or we suspect that they're part human, that could have been pheromones, too, that stopped us. But something definitely stopped us, and it was a little paranormal, if you want to call it that, because you couldn't see what was stopping it.
All right, we'll do the next one, and I wonder how Joe's feeling listening to these sounds. Are you remembering your home world, Joe? Alright, please talk to us and we'll be done with the sound.
Was done in 1974, again, the same night the Samurai Cry was. That was me trying to mimic what they were saying. This is one of the first times they really interacted with us while we're outside our shelter. And they would just start screaming and then talking, saying something. You hear them chatter amongst themselves and you cry out directed at me. And I just got up and started yelling back at them, trying to mimic them. And that's the response I got. We think they were trying to ask us something, ask me and my friend something, we don't know what. Today, I don't know what they were wanting to ask me, or tell me maybe, or whatever, but it sounded like, I got some other sounds that sound like they're asking me a question. I mean, it really has that that sound to it, like it is a question, like it. And I just go back and try to mimic them. So anyway, what they want to say, we don't know until one comes in and sits down and looks at a tree and points at it and says, ooga, ooga, that's a tree. Then we'll know that ooga, ooga means tree. Otherwise, you don't know what they're really saying. But I can say this, it was an exciting night. We had a lot of excitement in that mountains. And it's just been quite a thrill.
Yeah. One more question, and I'll turn over to Wham and then let her lead in on the second hour. When it comes to me and Wham have had enough experiences with weird stuff from UFO to all kinds of stuff, that we definitely have no, you know, trouble whatsoever accepting some type of quantum situation with Bigfoot. But I know in the past that I've been attacked for calling Bigfoot paranormal by people in the community. I've been threatened, people threaten to beat me up for saying Bigfoot paranormal. Like, really, like, mean Bigfoot getting upset, trying to find my address. Just because I think Bigfoot's paranormal, which is crazy. And my evidence has always been like, well, if you don't believe it's possible that Bigfoot's paranormal, then do you believe that there's a part of you that carries on when you die? Obviously, if you do on any kind of level, if you can accept Christianity and all the weird stuff in there, then why is it such a big deal to accept that maybe Bigfoot is multidimensional? But my proof to that, you know, people who don't, you know, have such a hard time believing that cause we will or whatever, it's like, well, when you die, obviously a part of you is ejected out. That is forever, that gets ejected into said paranormal realm. So, I mean, there's your evidence right there. But I'm just kind of curious, have you had any rough feedback or anything from people? Are they upset that you wrote this at all?
The book?
Yeah.
No, absolutely not. I'm getting an unbelievable amount of orders for that book. No, it answers the questions, but in a scientific manner. What I do is, and I suggest to you, Jeffrey, just don't use the word paranormal, because that makes them cross their arms and get defensive. Because they say, well, it's flesh and blood. It's running around out there. People are seeing it. It poops. It eats. It has babies. It does all those things. How could it be paranormal? Well, there's where the rub is right there. If you just say there's something going on with them, and there is science there. Because what's paranormal today, as soon as we learn about it, it's just normal. And I'm going into that with my studies. Trying to get the normality into this phenomenon. And the quantum Bigfoot explains that to people, because when you say they're flesh and blood only, that means you've made up your mind what they are. You know it, so why even do anything else other than set up a trail cam and go look for them? That's what most researchers are doing. And I take a little bit of a blunt sometimes, but not for what you're thinking. It's because I'm so far... I don't want to say, I don't know how to say this, because most researchers, again, are looking for the flesh and blood creature. And there's a science behind how they can disappear. It's called frequency and energy. And I think you read my book, didn't you, Jeffrey?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. Well, everything is a frequency. And when you can raise your vibrational frequency to a high enough level, you can disappear from our perception. Because we live in a three-dimensional world, four counting time and light. And yet there's 11 dimensions mathematically according to quantum physics, and that's not disputed. There's other dimensions. Religion will call them heaven. Science calls them dimensions. There's several things, and that's why I quote a lot of scriptures in my book, because there's a lot of spirituality that goes with quantum physics. In fact, I think they're almost one and the same. Even Jesus said, I wish that all could be one with the Father as I am one with the Father. Well, the oneness is what we are. We just... are separating ourselves energy. We're all energy. And Stephen Hawking, you mentioned energy goes somewhere. Well, it does. Stephen Hawking proved that in physics. I quote him in my book. His energy, even though it leaves our body, it goes out, and it cannot be destroyed. So what happens? Well, there you are. In heaven, or some people want to believe in re-embodiment, whatever, the energy is around, and something's going on with it. So... I really love what I've been studying this physics thing for over 10 years, and I've just been writing on this book for the last two. It's really, I quote a lot of science in it, but I also try to couple it together with the Bigfoot phenomenon, how they do what they do. My personal thoughts are explained in the book a little bit. I think they probably have more than two vocal cords, because how else can anything do what they do vocally? We've heard sounds that are just unanswerable up there. There is a UFO connection, I believe that. because I think aliens are involved in this somehow. They've either manipulated the DNA of a primate, which is very likely. I think our government might be doing the same thing, to be honest with you, but I'm not sure what the personality might be of that thing. Anyway, there's a lot going on, and there's different types. If you...
All right, well, let's turn it over to Wham.
Well, can you hear me?
Yeah,
I hear you.
Ron, I've heard, in fact, I own the CDs of all of the recordings that you've made. And,
oh, bless your heart. Bless your heart.
I did this for a very specific reason other than the fact that they're interesting. But I work with and consult with Gail Beatty here in the Hudson Valley, who has started a Bigfoot research group here. And she's a big fan of yours and has followed you a lot. In fact, she keeps those sounds with her because she and the individuals that do the field work around have had some interesting sound experiences too, although they are different than the ones that you have recorded. And I wanted to, if you don't mind, I wanted to share with you some of what they have experienced. I don't have them recorded. I can just tell you about them because they happen sort of like on the fly, you know what I mean? And so not all of it can be recorded. But they were having a lot of experiences in certain specific places here in the Hudson Valley where there were lots of reports, and these reports were coming from fishermen and hunters mostly, and occasionally individuals who, you know, had decided to go camping in particular areas or who lived near the edge of certain locations. And some of the things that people did report hearing they're not exactly like what you've recorded, but they didn't match with what people were familiar with in terms of, you know, there are bears around here and there are foxes and there are, you know, bobcats, things like that. And so when they started going out in the field, they noticed that they were having difficulty. They would get certain types of sound and recordings. They would take clear recorders, that kind of thing out, those kinds of things, and they were getting indications of interesting electromagnetic distortions and things like that. And there were a couple of really kind of intense things where there was one instance that they have where they apparently wandered into an area where whoever was there did not want them to be there and were like attacked essentially with stones being thrown at them and sticks and really loud noises, and that sense of that force that you were talking about where all of a sudden they knew that they should not go any further. You know what I mean? Whatever that is.
Mm-hmm.
So they decided that they would take a slightly different and perhaps less invasive tack, and they started taking some of the equipment that ghost hunters take out into the field, where basically what you do is you record electromagnetic fields and you record any kind of, they're called voice boxes. Are you familiar with what I'm talking about?
Yes, I think so. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, basically, you basically have, there are two different types, and there's one where you just ask questions, and then if there's a response, it can either be a light response, or it can be like if there's any kind of an energy spike, it can translate it into a sound, but it isn't like a receiver, you know, like, so it's not going to pick up radio sound. And the other one is a box that constantly scans frequencies.
Mm-hmm.
So that if there's a frequency that suddenly gone out.
That's good reading.
Yeah, it is. And they have been recording some of the things that have been being said to them.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the things that are being said to them they're kind of like, some of them don't make a lot of sense to us, you know. They seem to be kind of random, but they're in patterns. And there's a lot of talk about fear, and a lot of talk about, and this is usually like one or two words at a time, about fear, about humans invading, or humans blaming, and there's a kind of emotional intensity in what's being said that has led them to believe that at least whatever they're contacting, and the reason they think they're Bigfoot is because there are other Bigfoot sort of evidences around, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
They have gotten the feeling that these beings are in distress, essentially. I don't know how else to put it, that they're in distress. And that part of the reason why they are kind of wandering in these areas where they're at is because humans are kind of driving them into these places. And it's not so much a matter of them trying to warn humans, you know, like in a prophetic way, but it's more like they're just expressing their concern and their dismay with human behavior.
Mm-hmm.
it's kind of the conclusion that she's drawn. And I mean, they're still out there doing it. But I didn't know if you had heard of other similar types of experiences that people were having, and all of the different things that people are telling you about.
Yes, there's a lot of, I hear this all the time. Not exactly all the same, that's for sure. But then these things aren't all the same. Some
right.
of them may not be interdimensional. They may be so diluted down from inbreeding with indigenous people that they don't change dimensions. They just stay in ours and live and die, but they take care of their own, according to the Native American lore.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the sounds, some of them may not be able to talk like what we had. These things that we had actually talked, well, the human definition, they have a
right.
language.
Right.
If they're only speaking one or two words, I hear that quite a bit. But it could be, too, that they're just not supposed to really interfere with us. We've been given dominion on this earth, and that's something I tell people too, because the biggest thing that will keep you away from these things is, one, your fear, and if you go shooting, if you want to go hunting them, they'll think they'll see that aura around you, and they'll know what your intentions are. And if your heart needs to be in the right place, and it has to be connected to your brain the proper way, and your brain needs to be connected to the inner eye, the third eye, they call it, the pineal gland, and I think once you clean that up, decalcify it, you're able to sense things better. You have intuition. And those things come, they're part of who we are as humans. We're made in the image of God. And that's a big thing to say, and that's a big thing to try to realize, is God is a creator, right? Didn't he create everything? Well, we're made to be creators, and we're not creating. We're not walking on water like Jesus said we could. He said we can do all things he did and more, but we're not doing it. We're not connected like we need to be connected. And that's what I get into a little bit in my book, too. Different chapters will hit on this in my book. But, yeah, the sounds different people tell me about are unique. The rock throwing means you probably should go a different way.
Right.
We've had rocks right. thrown. Myself and Al Berry, the man I mentioned earlier, the investigative guy, he and I became friends later on, and we started speaking at conventions in different places, and he's passed away now, but he and I went to a place in Plumas County, Northern California, where these guys were saying they were these things were around there, and they've seen them and saw them. I always get those two mixed up. But anyway, we were there standing around the campfire where they took us way back in the mountains there in the California Sierras. And this big rock came by us just whirling like the speed of an arrow. And I mean, it came fast and hit this tree, knocked a big piece of bark off of it. Went over through that thing. Didn't want us there. Mm-hmm. And it couldn't have been a man unless they had a catapult down there, which I don't see how that could have been. But I'm saying that because there are different ones. Some will do certain things all the way, not just in the United States, but they seem to be having these things come out all over the world. They are multiplying, and what they're here for, and what their agenda is something that needs to be thought about.
Yeah, I was going to ask you whether you thought that there were more, whether you thought that there were actually more of them, or whether just more people are reporting them, because we have, because humans have spread out, you know, so much, and there's so many of us now, and so we are sort of invading into places where they traditionally have been and have lived on their own. I mean, I know the natives that lived here where I live, well, there are still some natives here, but, you know, when they were living prior to colonization, they really, what I've been told by them is that they really understood certain parts of the forest to belong to these beings. And they, you know, they had a name for, at least around here, a name for those beings, and his name was Msingwe. And they had, and he lived in certain parts of the forest that he didn't go into because it was just sort of agreed, you know. And they knew where that place, those places were. And so it was just a matter of respect. And if there had to be some crossing that had to be made, you know, you announced yourself and you made an offering and were watchful in the event that you needed to leave. So, but I was just wondering whether or not you think that there are actually more of them, or we're just running into them more.
I think you're right on both counts. You're right on both counts. We know there's little ones. We found little 9-inch tracks next to the 18-inch track in the snow that we followed. There's small ones. I record a small voice. We've heard a small voice several times. So they breed. And they're multiplying, mm-hmm. and we're encroaching. We're encroaching into their areas more and more, and then more and more people are seeing them because of that, and because there are more of them. I have no idea, nobody does, how many there could be, and what areas might have more of them. I live on the Olympic Peninsula here in Washington, and it's just amazing how many sightings are coming out of these mountains. People are seeing them. These are thick woods. But they are still elusive. I mean, it's amazing how something so big and so strong and so everything they are can stay so hidden. So they're stealthy, but how do they stay so hidden when they're as big as they are from humanity? More and more, but I don't think they're supposed to. They're supposed to stay away from us. And that's probably a reason for that, because we got to live out our own karmas, our own destiny. We've been given a life, and we're supposed to make whatever we can out of it, and I think we need to pay attention to that, because that's what we're here for. And 1 Peter 2:9 in the Bible will tell us who we're supposed to be, and that's a very important scripture right there. We will reign as kings and priests, and really over what? I never did see heaven when I was a younger man as being very appealing. If I had to stand up there and herd sheep or something, that just didn't sound good to me. So I've always thought there had to be more to it. And I don't know where to go from there, but this is fun doing all this stuff. It's been fun. I've been very fortunate to have made enough, have the means to travel the world and see and study this a lot. And the enigmatic remains that I found in Peru cemented within my mind that aliens have definitely been here. The remains we found down there were not like we are. They were not human like we are. They were hybrid. And you wonder how that happened, if it didn't happen like it did in the days of Noah. You know, and that's, the Bible talks about the days of Noah, too. as it was in the days of Noah, so shall be in the second coming. Well, giants are here. They're not, you know, they may be eating some people. I don't know. There's a whole bunch of people here that says they're really bad. A bunch of people here know they're trying to communicate with us. They're friends of ours. Don't mess with them. Well, there's both out there. So what's going on? There's a lot of people missing around some of these national parks. When they go out by themselves, they never are found. Or when they're found in something in a place where it didn't make any sense at all. So there's an element that I talk about in my programs too. When I do, how am I going to say this? Know who you are as a human. I said that, but. I lost a little train of thought there. Boy, I'm so good, forgive me. It'll come to me. It'll come to me in a minute, maybe.
Yeah.
It happens. I'm waiting to see if Joe wants us to go on break. Joe, if you can hear me, let me know, and we'll go on break.
Everybody, I mean, I know. Go ahead. Go ahead. He's got to say that the call signs anyway, so go ahead.
You're listening to United Public Radio 107.7 FM New Orleans, and we're waiting on Joe to get the break, and then we'll go on break for 8 minutes. We'll just see what happens here. What's your main website, Ron?
It's ronmoorhead.com or bigfootsounds.com. Both of them go to the same spot. Yeah, we need to plug that, probably, don't we?
Yeah.
Yeah. The people know where to get all your happy sounds.
You ever run into Kawani at all? I've had him on. It's pretty.
Yeah,
pretty
I know.
Bad.
I know him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I've known him since the first 1970. Let's see, what was it? A long time ago, we met, and we've had a good rapport. He's a lot into the Native American cultures, like we were talking about a minute ago. Are we on break now, or everybody hearing me?
No,
we're still on there.
Oh, well, I better watch what I say then.
We're just going to use an F word.
I don't believe in talking negatively about anybody, and Kawani would be the very last one I'd talk about. He's a very humble man. He's a very nice man. He's a very smart man. Very educated man, so he's just a good man, and so there.
I have I've interviewed him before, definitely enjoyed it, and definitely he'll take you down a trip, that's for sure.
Well, he's into the interdimensional, there's no doubt about that, and
yeah.
So am I. I thought at one time he was thinking they were all good. Well, that's where I crossed swords with him a little bit, because I should say swords. But they're not all good. There's a lot of people who report some bad things about these things. So I think it's who their creator was, who made them in the image of the primate like they are. They seem to be coming, and I think some of them may be just totally alien. I mean, that's possible. And also, energy can take different forms, so you got to watch for that. But, oh, I know what I was going to say, is know who you are. Gosh, I'm going to wait and talk
yeah.
and say that right.
Well, you know, the way I look at it is like, you know, not all human beings are really great either. So, you know, I mean, I can't expect these other beings to all be good or bad either. You know what I mean? It's like...
Well, the difference of them is we are all humans. And by the definition of human, we're 100% all of us. No matter what color, where we are, we're rated as humans.
Right.
I don't think these are all supposed to be the same genome. They have a different DNA, some of them. A lot of
them. Well, yeah, I mean, they're made, I'm just saying that in terms of, you know, if they have sentience, you know, then they... Even dogs and cats, you know, I mean,
sure.
They have, there's probably less variation there, but even they have different temperaments.
Hey, guys,
so,
I got to go on break, Joe's telling me. All right,
okay,
everybody,
okay.
We'll be back in about 8 minutes. We're going on break. We'll be back very shortly. Thanks for listening. All right.